101.9 High FM, One Nation, One Station.
Joining us on the line to talk about that is Henna Zuberi. She's the director of the Washington DC office of the human rights organization, Justice for All. A very, very good morning to you, Henna. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Yep, excellent. Thank you. So has there been progress? Is this, we're starting to at least see reports in mainstream media. We were horrified how little attention this has been receiving. Slowly, it's starting to become a thing. We've seen some U.S. announcements about it from politicians. But is actual progress being made?
So there has been some movement. For example, in Canada, the Canadian government, 266 MPs, did vote for a motion brought about by the opposition Conservative Party. This puts pressure on Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's government to follow suit. So this would be like a resolution. It's not non-binding, but it comes after years of advocacy in Canada. Similarly, as you said, in the United States, there was a genocide determination by the U.S. state government now after the Biden administration. And this was done on the last day of the Trump administration. Now that the President Biden administration has come in, they are saying that they're reviewing this determination from legal aspects. And there is a lot of pressure from activists and advocates on the ground, as well as politicians as well, to make sure that we don't backtrack on this determination. I had some good, read some good news coming out of Australia. Mm-hmm. That Australia and Turkey, Turkey especially, are moving to investigate whether to label these violations as genocide. And a lot of people do ask, why should this, is this designation important? Aren't the crimes bad enough, even if they're just crimes of humanity, against humanity? And to them, I would like to say that it's important to label it what it is. And then obviously, as many of as you know, and many of your audience may know, that the genocide determination does carry legal implications with it. So we hear that Senator Rex Patrick in Australia has proposed a motion to consider the treatment of Uyghurs in Xinjiang constitutes the crime of genocide. So this motion would take place now.
So what happens? What follows a classification of genocide? What would the remedies then be available?
So some of the remedies is obviously then cases in the International Criminal Court can take place. The U.S. designation has sanctions attached with it on several top Chinese officials. And then here in the United States, we have a global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act that can seize, once those that act is implemented, then accounts can be seized, and particular people can be punished that are attached to those accounts. So we saw this just recently with Burma. The U.S. Government has seized over, they say, $1 billion of Burmese government funds because now, when the military junta took over the civilian government. So there are other mechanisms that come into play when there's a genocide determination.
Has there been any recognition, acceptance, or even engagement from the Chinese government?
No recognition whatsoever. In fact, I just had a 3-hour interview with Zumra Daoud today. She is a former camp. She's a survivor. She was incarcerated in a camp. She's married to a Pakistani man, and that was one of the only reasons why she was able to go out. And the atrocities that she bore witness to, and her greatest win is that The Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson, Wang Bin, held up her picture and said, you know, this is a woman of loose, I mean, he basic attacks on her character and, you know, just calling her an inferior woman, just very sexist language used to discredit her. And she's taking that as a win that her picture was actually held up and that she's shaken them up so badly because she's testified in front of the Senate over here. She's been on BBC and CNN and all these mainstream media channels talking about everything that has occurred with her family. And her story is just, she was forcefully given tubal ligation, so she cannot bear any more children. She told us stories about these relatives, the Chinese relatives that would come live in their house. Each Uyghur person is given, whether child or an adult, is given a relative by the Chinese government. And her 10-year-old girl's relative was a over 35-plus man who often she was very scared of. And this man would be was allowed to go into her daughter's bedroom. I mean, it's just atrocious. And she said all my entire, and she spent 18 months in the camp. She said, what sort of psychological torture did I go through to know that this man is my, has access to my child? And
it's beyond, it's actually beyond belief that this is going on, that we have documented, witnesses who are telling these stories. And I mean, obviously something is being done, but all the while we talk about it, there are people actually living under these conditions every day.
Definitely. One movement that is also happening is the pressure on the International Olympics Committee to relocate the 2022 Beijing Summer Olympics to a different country. And over here in the United States, advocates are pushing for more asylum grants to Uyghur refugees because there's so many who are stateless right now. They don't have passports. Their passports have expired. They might have been students studying in various countries around the world, and now their passports have expired, and they do not dare to go walk into a Chinese embassy because they know they'll be deported right back to the detention camps. So they're stateless, and so one of the things activists are pushing for is a greater asylum in different countries for Uyghur asylees.
Unfortunately, that is where we do have to leave it. Keep doing the amazing work that you're doing. Keep being the voice for the people who are voiceless. That is Henna Zuberi. She's the director of the Washington, D.C. Office for Human Rights Organization, Justice for All. Henna, thank you, as always, for chatting to us.